One of the signs that society is breaking down, one of the signs that the end must be near in 2 Timothy 3 is that children do not obey their parents. And I would say to you, it is your starting point. If you are in your parents' home and you're starting to wrestle with what you believe, not with what your parents believe and not with what you believe because they believe it, but with what you believe, this is where you start. You're starting to wrestle with spirituality as a young person. Like, okay, what does it mean that I have a relationship with Christ? And what does it mean that I want to follow Jesus? And how does that work out since my parents make me go to church? That you claim, no, I want to follow Jesus. I want to follow after him. Where do I start? This is where you start. Obey your parents.
Ministry of San Gabriel Community Church. Welcome to Growing in Grace with our teacher and pastor, Steve Ballantyne. You can find us online at sangabrielcommunity.org or growingingraceradio.org. And you'll find us right here today in Colossians. We're looking at chapter 3, verses 18 through 21 in a continuing mini-series called Gospel-Centered Relationships, specifically relationships within the dynamic of the family. Today, children. Paul addresses children here in Colossians. So, children, stick around. Adults and parents, too. Here's Pastor Steve with today's program.
We've been looking at Colossians 3, and Paul has moved from a broad discussion of the Christian life in chapter 3 to a specific discussion about family. And we looked a couple weeks ago at the responsibility of wives, and we looked last week at the responsibility of husbands, and this week we look at the responsibility of kids and parents, particularly fathers. And what we've seen is that a genuine gospel, a gospel that is believed, a gospel that is embraced by our lives will impact daily life. That's Paul's point. That if it is a true gospel, if it is a gospel, if all this about Christ is true, then this will move from the theoretical, the theological, to the practical. That gospel theology affects life, everyday life. It affects home life. It affects marriages. It affects kids. And that's his desire, is for us to see this, that we can't keep these things in the theoretical. A few years ago, Christy and I stumbled across this show on TV called The World's Worst Chefs, World's Worst Cooks, Worst Cooks Somewhere, America. So Worst Cooks in America, it's not the world's worst. Worst Cooks in America, something like that. And this is what shocked me about the introduction to the characters in the show. They were talking about how much they enjoyed the Food Network. And they were talking about their favorite chefs. That these are people that sit every week in the sanctuary of their homes watching Pastor Flay tell them how to cook, instructing them step by step on how to grill meat, instructing them on how to do these things, and they can't boil water. Literally, can't boil water. And so the premise of the show is to teach them to do this. But how striking is that? And how easy is that for us to do in the church? To sit under the Word and to know everything about the Word and to be able to describe the Word to others and to say, this is what we believe and this is what we embrace and here's our doctrinal statement, but then not be able to live it out. And Paul is concerned that we not be people who soak in all this information and can't live it. What do sponges do when they soak up water and don't get squeezed out? They begin to stink. I don't know if you said that, but yes, they get sour and they stink, right? And that's what we do as believers when all we do is bring this in. So his intent is for us to live this out in everyday life. What does it mean to follow Christ? What does it mean that he's supreme in every area of life? What does it mean when he tells us in Philippians 2 to work out your salvation? This is a part of it, to say, how does my salvation impact school? How does it impact my marriage? How does it impact the raising of my kids? That these things are connected. And so he talks now in the text that's before us this morning about the relationship between parents and kids. And God's design, as we looked at when we did the baby dedication, is that He wants to use the family to pass his truth from generation to generation. That is God's design. And say, I'm going to give the fathers this instruction, and the fathers are going to pass those on to their children, and those children are going to pass these things on to their children, and that truth is passed down. It is precisely why the family in our country is under such great attack. Because Satan knows if he can undermine this very institution, that one of the primary ways that God has designed to move truth from generation to generation will be undermined. And so marriage is under attack, and manhood is under attack, and womanhood is under attack, and what it means to be a submissive child in the home is under attack. Because if we can diminish this, then we will impact the gospel. And so as a church, small C, San Gabriel, and as the church, big C, broader in the world, we must be committed to God's design for the family. And here he moves into the realm of children. There is a unique joy to experiencing the birth of your child. Is there not? It is a unique joy. And probably fathers, mothers, you can remember this moment. I can relate more to the fathers for various reasons. But so you there you are in the hospital, and that baby's being born, right? You remember that moment? And it's just this overwhelming feeling of joy and like an awe, like wow. And everyone's coming to see you, and they're coming to see the baby, and they're holding the baby, and they're wishing you well, and they're giving you gifts, and you're surrounded by people. All right, but then what happens next? They put you in the car to go home. Like, there's no test. That was one of the things I thought. I'm like, surely there's a test to let two young people out of this hospital with another human being. But they just let you go, and you're on the way home, and it's just you and your wife and this thing in the back seat, like, it's all us now, hon, right? And this is unbelievably precious and overwhelming sense. I'm responsible for another life. And Paul says, this is a gift that God has given you. Scripture sees children as gifts from God to us that we now have to steward as parents. And what will you do with this precious gift? And children, there's responsibility for you as well. Let's look at the text. We'll read it starting in verse 20 and verse 21 of Colossians 3. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. And fathers, do not provoke your children, lest they become discouraged. Well, let's start with the kids. First, verse 20. Who is Paul talking to here? Well, he's talking to children, but who are the children? Raise your hand if you think you qualify as a child. Okay, the teenagers are all reluctant. So let me define it. They did kind of I guess. The word that Paul used here is a general word for someone who's still under parental guidance. It's a word that's used for someone who's not independent from their parents. You know, if you're 23 and you're still living at home and you spend 8 hours on the day on video games and don't know why your mom won't get off your back, he's still talking to you, okay? It's someone, if you're, this is a test maybe, if your mom still folds your underwear, he's talking to you, okay? You're living under the authority of your parents. You're in the home. You go away to college, right? But you still come home and you got your room and your space. He's still talking to you. Okay, these are children. But he's addressing those that are old enough not just to be living under the authority of their parents, but to be spoken to directly by the Apostle Paul with his message from God. He is, I think, probably made an equation in our culture. We are speaking to kind of that older child, preteen, teenager who's on the verge of independence but still living in their home. Now, there's a couple of things that fascinate me about this. The first is this. Paul assumes, let's back up. Paul writes a letter. He's in prison. He sends this letter to the church of Colossae, right? How did that letter get to the people? Was it received and they ran down and made a bunch of copies and then on Sunday morning passed it out? That's not how they did it, right? They had to take that letter and they had to read it. And if there was going to be two copies, someone had to go kill an animal, right? And dry the skin out and write it down. It was a big deal. And so the way the word got from Paul to these people is that someone would stand up in these home churches and read it to them. Now the reason I point that out is because in this text, he does not say, parents, make sure your children obey. He starts with the wives, and this, someone stands up and reads and says, wives, and there would have been wives in the room. And then he says, husbands, and there would have been husbands in the room. And then he says, children. And so what do we assume from that? The children are in the room. The children are part of the assembly. Now listen, I've not gotten hate mail. I've gotten some nasty looks from fifth graders who are like, really? You're going to make us stay in service? I know it's hard, and I know I talk a long time sometimes. I get that. I get the struggle. But this is partly why. Because in the early church, it was understood that the family was together. And Paul addresses here children. They are part of the assembly. And he says, I've got a word for you, you kids that are sitting there. The other thing that makes this amazing is this. This is a culture where children had no rights. This is a culture where the father owned the children. This is a culture where if your dad decided to sell you into slavery, he could. Imagine that. That gives a whole new meaning to your dad having a bad day at work. He comes home, right? Your mom says, your dad will deal with it when you get home. You don't know what that means. It might mean he's going to take you out to the corner and sell you. This is the culture they lived in. And Paul says, not fathers, make sure you're kids do this. He looks the children in the eye and says, kids, this is your responsibility. You are a person. And you are responsible for these things before God. You claim the name of Christ. You say you're saved. You say you know Jesus. Then this is your responsibility. So he's speaking to the children. Now, what does he tell them to do? Obey. Obey your parents. How important is this command to God? There may be an exception to this. Please bring it to me if you can find it. It is the only command I can find in all the scripture that's given to children. Now, there's other things that if you're saved and you're a child, you're responsible for, but it is the only command in all of scripture where it just says, kids, do this. Children, do this. It's worded differently. Sometimes it says, honor your father and mother. Sometimes it's obedience. Sometimes it says it in the negative, don't despise them. But this is it. Kids, this is your command. Obey your parents. That's the sum of what God expects from you as a child. Be obedient to your parents. Why? Why does God reduce it to that? At the risk of alienating my primary target audience, the kids, I'm going to tell you why. It's because you're not all that bright. Okay, in the words of scripture, wise is the word. It's because you lack wisdom, because you lack the experience of life. You don't know how to live yet. Now, I know you think you know how to live, but you don't know how to live. And you think, and I know, I'm on to you 17, 18-year-old guys going, okay, yeah, maybe when I was 10, right? But that's not me anymore. But think about a child that just lacks wisdom. Think about a baby. Set them down in the kitchen and say, okay, here's a cup of apple juice or here's a cup of milk. You can have either one you want. Inevitably, that kid at some point is going to dismiss those and try to get under the sink and drink poison. Am I right? Why? A lack of wisdom. The teenager's saying, well, yeah, but not me. I'm grown up now and I'm out of that phase. Well, first of all, girls start moving out of that phase at 9, right? Guys start moving out of that phase at about 37. So probably if you're a guy, you're not out of that phase. But we lack wisdom. Children lack wisdom. They lack experience. They lack the ability to apply knowledge. And so we think as teenagers that we've grown out of that phase because, after all, I know everything now. So having known everything, surely I'm able to make wise choices. And I remember being baffled by my parents' lack of wisdom. I remember one time I was 12 or 13, and my good friend Mike, we wanted to go to the store. And my parents said, how are you going to get there? And I said, Mike's going to drive me. They said, Mike's 13. I said, yeah, but he's been driving for years. And he had been. He was from a single, his dad had left him, and his mom, he dropped his mom off at work, dropped his little brothers and sisters from the age of 11, driving around town, and then drove himself to school and drove around the corner so no one would know. And I thought, he's an experienced driver. Why won't you let me go, right? This is as a young teenager thinking there's all the wisdom in the world for me and Mike to be driving around town. Now that my son's 12, I realize the stupidity of my youth, right? But this is how we think. And God knows this and says, this is it. This is it, kids. This is your one command. Obey your parents. How serious is he about it? In Proverbs chapter 3, verse 17, it's a fascinating, you want a vivid picture. Kids, this is your picture. The eye that makes a father that makes a father sad and scorns to obey a mother will be picked out by the ravens of the valley and eaten by vultures. Listen to this. In Romans chapter 1, starting in verse 28, same author, Paul, he says, and since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do things that should not be done. Now he describes a debased mind. These are people that have been confronted with the glory of God and reject it, and he's going to describe what these horrible, depraved people look like. They're filled with all manner of unrighteousness and evil and covetousness and malice, envy, murder, strife. Okay, this is a bad list, isn't it? Deceit, maliciousness, they're gossips and slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil. What's next? Disobedient to parents. Paul, wait, whoa. Surely you didn't mean to put disobedient to parents on the same list as murderer, on the same list of people that's inventing ways to do evil. But that's exactly where he puts it. And he does the same thing in Timothy when he says, the days are going to come, the days are going to get evil, the perilous times are going to come upon us. And the signs of those times, all the things, we think of all the signs of the times. One of the signs that society is breaking down, one of the signs that the end must be near in 2 Timothy 3 is that children do not obey their parents. This is a serious issue with God. It is the one command he gives directly to you as children. He takes it seriously. And I would say to you, it is your starting point. If you are in your parents' home and you're starting to wrestle with what you believe, not with what your parents believe and not with what you believe because they believe it, but with what you believe, this is where you start. You're starting to wrestle with spirituality as a young person. Like, okay, what does it mean that I have a relationship with Christ? And what does it mean that I want to follow Jesus? And how does that work out since my parents make me go to church? You're here this morning because they woke you up and dragged you, not because you want to be here. But you claim, no, I want to follow Jesus. I want to follow after him. Where do I start? This is where you start. Obey your parents. Be obedient to your parents. Scripture puts up two clear and vivid and distinct paths of foolishness and wisdom. And we're instructed to listen to the instruction of our dad and not to despise our mother. And all of discipline, all of correction, all of instruction is for us as parents to be pointing our children down a path of wisdom. And kids, that is the overwhelming desire of most of your parents. I know there's always exceptions, but the overwhelming desire of most of the parents, of the kids in this room, is to lead them on a path of wisdom. And it is a fool that neglects that wisdom. And foolishness leads to destructions. It's a great note for us as parents that this is really the essence of discipline. For all the methodologies that we might employ, for all the different techniques that we might use, at the end of the day, it is to point our kids in the direction of wisdom and away from foolishness. And to put up stop signs and warning markers that the path you're on, child, will lead to destruction. And so come over here to the path of wisdom. And to the children, I would say this. It will save you, I promise you this. It will save you a lifetime of difficulty and misery to simply listen to and respond to your parents. I was trying to think this week of conversations I've had with people and then broadening that, thinking of my own life and then others' lives who I talked to, and then just more generally of hardships that are experienced in life. And it seems to me that virtually every hardship we experience in life could be traced back to a time when we disregarded the advice of our parents. When we just didn't listen to what mom said. When we just forsook the advice of our father. And I am telling you, I am encouraging you, I am warning you, kids, this morning. You want a life that is blessed and not a life that is full of difficulty. Listen to your parents. Their desire for you is good. God's desire is for your best. And he says, this is the path. Christy and I were talking about this last night, and she was recounting a time when she was, I think, junior high age or so, and her parents had told her, you're not watching Jaws. And she thought that was just a really bad decision. So she went to a slumber party, and they were showing Jaws, and she pretended not to watch it over the top of her sleeping bag. Her parents never found out. She was just telling me last night, she's like, for a month, she had nightmares. For a month, she couldn't sleep through the night, but couldn't tell her parents, right, because she had disobeyed. Finally, you'd have to know my wife's conscience. She had to confess it. She confesses everything, but that's where her and I part ways growing up. I'm going to the grave with some stuff I did, but she recognized in that small moment as a young child, wait a second, my parents weren't trying to deprive me of joy. They were guarding me, and they knew me better than I knew me. And they knew what this would do to me. And I didn't listen to their wisdom. I didn't listen to their advice. In a more ridiculous sense, I was imagining, pick your favorite prey animal. I was wildebeest or a gazelle on the fields of Africa. And I was imagining a little family of gazelle over on the bushes and the lions coming by and the mom saying to the teenage gazelle, now listen to me. I know you think you're faster, but you're not. They'll wear you down. They will devour you. And I was thinking of the ridiculous picture of the teenage boy gazelle going out and saying, hey, watch this. Watch how close with his buddies. Watch how close I can get, right? And the parents, of course, have seen generation after generation after generation. Uncle Ted the gazelle. Okay, now this is feeling ridiculous. But, they've seen others devoured. They've seen it time after time again. They've lost family members to this reality that they will devour you. And even though you feel like you know better and you feel like the desire is for your parents to just deprive you, they are offering you the path of wisdom. And God says, listen to them. Children, this is what you must do. Obey them.
And you're listening to Growing in Grace with Pastor Steve Ballantyne from San Gabriel Community Church. If you have questions or comments about the broadcast, maybe you have a prayer request, please reach out to us. We'd love to help out any way that we can. You can reach out to us at 626-656-1000 or stop by our website and drop us an email, sangabrielcommunity.org. If you're looking to join us for worship, we meet at 9 a.m., Sunday school at 10:45, and directions and information, again, can be found at sangabrielcommunity.org or by simply calling 626-656-1000. By the way, as you stop by our website, you'll find an archive of past sermons available to listen to, information about us, who we are, what we believe, and why. Pastor Steve's blog is available from our website as well, and information about San Gabriel Christian School. Please stop by sangabrielcommunity.org or call 626-656-1000. Please remember, as you contact us, this is a listener-supported ministry. As you link arms with us prayerfully and financially, we are able to continue the ministry here in the greater Los Angeles area. Please consider that as you contact us, won't you? Thank you so much for spending time with us today. We look forward to seeing you next week at this same time for another broadcast of Growing in Grace with Pastor Steve Ballantyne. Growing in Grace is the ministry of San Gabriel Community Church.